Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Hey, everybody, we got a great one today, you know, for a change. And this time, I really mean it. This one is actually really great, unlike so many that I say are great, even though they turn out to be embarrassing debacles. But this one, I've got Ben Wickler, the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, who's one of the best, if not the best, state party chairs in the country. I've had my eye on this guy for quite some time. Ben was one of the Harvard students, Team Franken, who helped me pull together my number one New York Times bestseller, Lies and Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. That was 20 years ago. Since then, Ben has been an organizer for one great organization after another, including Move On, and has led the Democratic Party of Wisconsin to some major landmark victories, like carrying Biden to victory in Wisconsin in 2020. Wisconsin is, of course, one of the key battleground states this cycle. Trump won it in 16 by 23,000 votes, Biden by just over 20,000. And right now, Biden and Trump are in a dead heat in the polls in Wisconsin. And we will be focusing on the battleground states as we lead up to November. Wisconsin has been an amazing story. In 2010, it went from a Democratic governor in both houses of the state legislature to a Republican governor, Scott Walker, and both houses turning Republican. And the state has been just a laboratory for oligarchy since. They gerrymandered the shit out of state legislative maps. It was so egregious that Democrats would have to win by 9 percentage points statewide to regain the majority. And in a 50-50 state, that wasn't and isn't ever going to happen. So while Democrats like Tammy Baldwin and Governor Tony Evers would win statewide, Republicans would overwhelmingly control the state legislature, at times within two seats of having a veto-proof majority. Because in 2010, something else happened. Citizens United, unleashing dark money, and the Republicans raised crap loads, flooding the airwaves with lies. And then in 2013 came Shelby County, giving the states the power to write election laws that made it harder for certain people, like, say, black folks in Milwaukee, to vote. And the Republicans got rid of public unions. All during this period, the Republicans held a narrow majority in the state Supreme Court until last year, in a race where more money was spent than in any previous judicial race in the country. Democrats took back the state Supreme Court, and this year that court threw out the gerrymandered map for the state legislature. And this November, there will be a fair map where, if Democrats win a majority of the votes, they will take the majority of the seats, restoring the Democratic trifecta they lost back in 2010. And Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, has been a huge factor in the struggle to make that possible. And Ben is my guest today. It is a great one today. You know, for a change. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, Let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ben, for my audience, is chair of the Democratic Party in the state of Wisconsin. That's correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Let's start out by just briefly explaining what that means. And I'd like you to explain that because you've been doing this for about 5 years, right?
I was elected June of 2019. So hitting 5 year mark in a couple months. And state parties are usually kind of the invisible infrastructure, the subterranean plumbing of American politics. We say we build the roads that the candidate cars drive on. Mm-hmm. State parties are sort of federated. So there's county parties in most states, and then the county parties are all part of state parties, and the state parties are all part of the Democratic, you know, National Committee nationally. And state parties in states where they run well, they run coordinated campaigns so that everyone running for state legislature and for Congress and for president and Senate, governor, they all work with the same group of volunteers to turn out votes for every Democrat on the ballot, as opposed to candidates trying to fight over, you know, which volunteers talk to who.
Yeah, we have a coordinated campaign in Minnesota, and we have a state party that really works, and so do you. I'll get back to that because Wisconsin is a key battleground state again. Biden won it by a little over 20,000 votes last cycle.
20,682. It's etched in my brain.
Yeah, I bet. That was in 2020. And Hillary lost by about the same amount, right? In 16.
Yeah, 23,000. It's been a minute since I remember that number. It was 23,000 and change.
Well, you weren't chair then, so it wasn't etched into your brain. Let's get into our history. We met a little over 20 years ago, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You were a key member of Team Franken. Those are the students who helped research lies and lying liars, who tell them a fair and balanced look at the right. Did you come up with the whole title or just lies and lying liars who tell them?
I came up with half the title, and I think it was that half, but it was like lies and lying liars who tell them, comma, something. There was a contest within Team Franken. You said you'd take out to dinner whoever came up with the title of the book. And so our friend Noah and I came up with the two halves of the title together that all worked out perfectly.
Sold a lot of copies. That was a good title. That's the key.
It was helped in the as a title. It was such a long title, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them a Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. And the punchline was in the subtitle. And I remember being worried that no one would get to that part of the title until Fox News Channel sued over the subtitle.
That's right.
It was the most helpful lawsuit in the history of book publishing that I've
ever had. Yeah, Franny, my wife, wanted to get a marching band to go in front of Fox going, "Thank you very much, boom. Thank you very much, boom. It's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me." That's from something. Now, do you remember our first meeting?
I vividly remember our first meeting.
Okay, so I was put out a thing to kind of all of Harvard students, which was a mistake, just because I got like over 50 people who wanted to be part of Team Franken. And that's a lot of people to interview. And you were one of the first, I don't know, five or 10. And you told me that you're a big Krugman fan, Paul Krugman, as am I, and also that you wrote for The Onion because you're from Madison. Everyone should know that. You grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, and you wrote for The Onion while you were in high school or while you're in college or both?
Both. So in high school, well, I started reading them in elementary school. I was a huge fan growing up. And I saved copies of it myself, and I find a cardboard box full of old issues of The Onion. And then in middle school, friends and I started a Onion-inspired underground student newspaper.
Great.
Which got us in trouble constantly, but was a huge blast.
Oh, that's great. That's perfect.
And then did the same thing in high school. And then we started sending copies of the high school newspaper to The Onion because The Onion had so many unsolicited submissions that they kept their address secret. So they had a P.O. box. So we would just send them, the Yellow Press was the name of our high school newspaper, and we'd send them every issue. And one day they wrote back and said, "This is pretty funny. Come in and meet us." So my very, very dear friend, Peter Keckley, and I went into the office, and it was like this dream of a place, with beanbag chairs, which was like so exciting. And then they invited us to start writing headlines. So we started doing that in high school and then did it all the way through college. And then I went to work for you, and Peter went on to become managing editor of The Onion over there. It was my gateway to Frankenwald.
That's kind of a dream thing for two guys starting in junior high, writing for The Onion. Conan O'Brien, I think, I can't remember, was the 100th anniversary of the Lampoon or something, said something like, "Hey, thanks, guys. You know, for 98 years, we were the premier humor magazine in the country, and you guys let The Onion become that." While you were at college, you were co-founder of the Student Global AIDS Initiative.
I will tell you a funny story about this. So there was a group of
students. I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. There's a group of students who are all thinking about the global AIDS crisis at the same time. It was something that was getting tons of press coverage. Harvard was actually a kind of hub for people who were working on this. Paul Farmer and Jim Kim led Partners in Health. They were the first kind of Western doctors doing AIDS treatment in the global South. Jeffrey Sachs, the economist at that time, was drawing attention to the fact that rich countries were funding almost nothing in the way of AIDS programs in developing countries. And I got really fired up and wrote a long proposal for starting a student group that would work to organize students to pressure Congress to increase funding for global AIDS programs. I wound up connecting with a bunch of other students. We started the Student Global AIDS Campaign, which is the national group. The Harvard AIDS Coalition was the Harvard chapter, and we launched them simultaneously. But I wrote this proposal and then heard about another student, a couple of students who'd gotten fired up about this. So I went to meet them at lunch and said, "Hey, what do you think of this idea?" and laid out the proposal. And one of the students was like, "Oh, let's do this. Like, let's be co-founders." So we were and that guy who said that went on to become a very minor celebrity when he was on The Apprentice, and then became a Trump toady who became the co-founder of Truth Social. His name is Andy Latinsky, and he's currently suing Trump, and Trump is suing him over who gets to own how much of the Truth Social bribe Donald Trump social network.
It does seem like it has an inflated worth right now. Considering that they lost money and their subscribers are very de minimis.
Yeah, not a success story. But Harvard AIDS Coalition was
a big success. I think it had something to do with Bush, George W., getting so involved in it, right?
So we were one part of this big surge across the country. We were working with people who had been involved in Jubilee and debt relief movement, with AIDS activists who'd been involved in ACT UP, with Black church leaders. A lot of faith leaders really made the case to George W. Bush, who actually had a kind of faith coalition that he was meeting with. I had the experience that I and other students were meeting with congressional staff and getting into the weeds of the policies that wound up becoming the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief.
Okay, let's move on from this, though.
Okay. Well, I'll just say I met my wife, met my wife through this, fell in love with her as we were putting up posters for a protest that helped.
Oh, okay. I'm glad this part's in. I know Beth very well. Beth Wickler was my legislative assistant on healthcare. Anyway,
Yeah, much later. So, but at that, I mean, well, she met you because I was working with you on the book.
And you had fallen in love.
And I'd fallen in love. And she had actually broken up with me at that particular moment. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I was saying. You had fallen in love. She kind of fell out of love for a while, but it's a happy ending. You have three beautiful children and live happily in Madison, where you grew up.
Now, where I grew up. I actually bought the house from my mom that I grew up in, and that's why I'm raising my kids.
Oh, yeah. I did not know. I've been in that house. Okay. Now, you decided to graduate at some point. I remember you took the term off when we were working together, and then you became a producer at the Al Franken show for a couple of years at the Air America radio.
My first job out of college.
And then press secretary for Sherrod Brown's first campaign for a while anyway. For the Senate, he's got another big race this year. We're looking at battleground states, and that's a battleground state, at least in the Senate. Then you worked with Avaaz.org, and briefly, what's Avaaz?
Avaaz is sort of like a global move on. They're an international grassroots advocacy group that works on things like democracy, human rights, fighting disinformation.
Yeah. Okay.
I led their climate change campaigning for several years. So I got to go to UN climate negotiations and try to get the world to, get its act together.
Yeah. And that worked. Okay. Then moveon.org. Then that's when you're in DC.
Yes. So we moved to DC so that Beth could work for you. And then I went to work for Move On. She was working with you during the right wing assault on the Affordable Care Act. And I was on the outside helping organize protests and grassroots pressure. And I vividly remember you would come out to give a speech against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. So I'd be able to introduce you at the protest. And then she and I would like check in about what was happening with babysitters that afternoon while you gave your speech. And then she would like walk you back into the Senate and I would pick up back the microphone and lead more protest chants.
Okay. The point is that you've been doing this organizing forever, sort of speak.
This is, but the central thing of my life is trying to make the biggest difference that I can.
Okay, let's move on, shall we say, to Wisconsin. And you move your family back in 2018 from D.C. And you worked on Tony Evers' first campaign for governor, right?
I volunteered on his first campaign. So I was at Move On and volunteering in my personal capacity, traveling around the state, helping kick off.
I'm glad you cleared that up for everybody. Okay. And he won. He beat Scott Walker, right?
Yeah, by 1.1 percentage point, which is the running joke in Wisconsin is that's called the Wisconsin landslide because it's by more than 1%.
And you became chair in 2019.
Elected that June.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of the Republican Party in Wisconsin. What a pernicious group, starting in 2010 when Walker was first elected, right?
Yep. The Tea Party sweep, Wisconsin went from a blue trifecta state to a red trifecta state. Ron Johnson beat Russ Feingold in that year. Yeah, the Republican Party, one of its kind of founding moments was in Ripon, Wisconsin in the 19th century as a radical anti-slavery party. But this is a very different Republican Party that came in and decided to try to change everything.
And Scott Walker was basically leading it. And a lot of key things sort of happened in that year, 2010, in addition to him being elected and the legislature flipped. One of the things that happened in 2010 was Citizens United.
So this was the irony. I had interned for Russ Feingold in the U.S. Senate. Russ Feingold was this champion with John McCain of McCain-Feingold.
Every Republican like McConnell would go like, we don't need this. What we need is disclosure, 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 disclosure. Sunshine is the greatest disinfectant. And of course, after Citizens United was, decided, we tried to do a Disclose Act. And all those guys who had done that, said that, were now against disclosure.
Yeah.
Bastards.
So they knocked out McCain-Feingold with the Citizens United decision. And then the number one target of the dark money in 2010 in the Senate was Russ Feingold, the author of the bill. And they flooded in and replaced this really brilliant champion of good government with Ron Johnson, who's one of the most disgraceful, shameful, disastrous senators in the United States of America. And that moment, yep. The Wisconsin Republican Party was led by a guy named Reince Priebus, who might be familiar to listening to this podcast. He and Scott Walker, they came in, they smashed unions systematically. We've had the biggest decline
in the public unions.
It started with public unions, but then he was asked by his biggest donor, Diane Hendricks, what is he going to do about private sector unions? And he said, divide and conquer. So first they went after public sector unions, and then later they passed a right to work law and, you know, repealed prevailing wage. And like it was a wholesale assault on organized labor in phases so they could manage the opposition at each step.
Yeah. Outline what they did between like 2010 and just not that long ago.
One of the biggest things is they made it harder to vote. They passed one of the most restrictive voter ID laws in the nation.
There were two big decisions, and one is Citizens United, and the other is Shelby County. And Shelby County basically opened it up so states and localities could pass whatever friggin' law they wanted.
That's right.
To make it harder to vote.
So one analysis in 2022 found Wisconsin's the fourth hardest state to vote in the country, second hardest state to register to vote. And there was a whistleblower who was working for a Republican legislator in 2011 who said that when Republican legislators found out the impact on Black voters and young voters of the law that they'd proposed, they were giddy. That was the intended effect. And that law was held up in court till 2015. Then conservative jurists said that it could go into effect. And boom, 2016, massively lower rates of voting among Black voters, especially in Milwaukee. And the reduction in voting by those voters and the gap in those voters is bigger than Trump's margin of victory in 2016, which incidentally was 22,748. So this plan worked. They suppressed the vote. They rigged the state to high heaven in terms of gerrymandering, the most aggressive partisan gerrymander in the nation.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And we're back with Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. You once compared it to some countries, saying it was harder to vote in Wisconsin than in some third world country, I think. Do you remember this?
Yeah. So there was a study, Democracy Deserts, it was called. What it found is that Wisconsin was similar to Syria and Congo in the level of...
Syria.
Yeah.
I don't know Congo very well, but Syria doesn't seem like a model democracy.
Nope. Not where you look for a well-functioning, responsive government. We got the worst score in the nation in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. So the redistricting was just egregious to the point where what would Democrats have to get? What percentage of the vote would they have to get in order to get the majority in the House or the State Senate?
Under these old maps, mm-hmm. Democrats would have to win statewide by about 12 percentage points in a state. To be clear, it's the only state where four of the last six presidential elections have come down to less than one percentage point. We had a recent election that we'll talk about where we won an 11-point landslide.
That's the Supreme Court?
The Supreme Court race in 2023. Janet Protasiewicz won the Supreme Court race by 11 points. She would not have won a majority in the Wisconsin State Assembly under her incredible maps.
No, of course not. So, I mean, there are times when Democrats receive more votes than the Republicans, and they still had something close to a veto-proof majority, right?
Yeah. So that happened. So 2011, they rigged the maps. 2012, Democrats won in a landslide. Tammy Baldwin, Barack Obama, big, huge wins. I think 7-point wins. Next door in Minnesota, similar performance, and Democrats won the state legislature. In Wisconsin, Republicans won giant majorities, increased their seat share from 2010 when they won a landslide to losing in a landslide in 2012. Republicans did dramatically better. It happened again in 2018. We won 54% of the votes. They won 63% of the seats.
And because you've now got the majority in the Supreme Court, that's been reversed. Talk about that.
Yes. Okay. So we've set the stage with what happened in 2010. There's been this incredible long fight that finally we've won in 2023, the majority on our state Supreme Court, which we didn't have for that entire time. The state Supreme Court was asked to review whether the maps were constitutional, and they read the Constitution, which is a novel idea in Wisconsin, and concluded that no, they were not constitutional. And so they said, these are thrown out. We need new maps. And they gave the legislature and the governor a deadline to select new maps. The Republicans got so freaked out that they thought that the Supreme Court was going to impose a Democratic gerrymander, which was never on the table in any way, that they agreed to pass the maps that the governor...
They didn't quite understand that the our side doesn't quite work their way, at least not in Wisconsin. I mean, I'm sure there have been other states where that's happened when the legislature has flipped, so has the redistricting.
In Wisconsin, there's a Fair Maps movement that has been organizing for fair maps at every step.
Well, that was just in response to the unfair maps. That's the only reason there was a Fair Maps movement.
The point is that the Republicans thought that we were going to be as bad as they were. So they decided to pass the governor's maps. And now we actually have maps where if we do well in the election, we'll win a majority in the state assembly this November. It is a sea change, generational shift, a big bang moment to reset a state government that has been locked into a system of undemocratic control for more than a decade. And I could not be more thrilled.
And that's why that Supreme Court, that was huge. There's more money spent in that by both sides than in any state Supreme Court race ever, right?
Any judicial race in American history. Each side in this election in 2023 spent more money than the combined total spending in any judicial race in American history.
Now, do you ever have to raise money?
That is my job.
Tell me about that. I mean, that's a big part of your job, right?
It is. It's the reality. And you know, what's interesting is when Democrats raise money, there's a combination of grassroots donations, which we have a big grassroots fundraising operation, a big online presence, an email list. We do events all over the place. And then we also do major donors. But with major donors, it's like we're raising money to raise their taxes. And at the Democratic Party, what we offer is you can help Democrats to win in the state that matters enormously for the entire country. We're not involved in the policymaking process. Like, this is just about, do you want Democrats to win or not? And we're in a moment where a ton of people, you know, even wealthy people who historically have not cared about politics or people who haven't necessarily aligned with the Democratic Party, they think democracy itself is on the line and they want to make sure that the Trump and the MAGA threat recedes. And Wisconsin is critical to that whole issue.
Is there any industry in Wisconsin where like really rich Democrats, it's in their interest to support the Democratic Party?
Well, the Florsheim Shoe Company,
yeah,
led by Democrats. They donate to the Democratic Party, and we do enormous amounts of door knocking. And people walk all over the state to knock on doors in their neighborhood. So you might
big shoe.
Yeah. And if you wear through your shoes, you're going to have to buy new shoes. And I personally wear Florsheims. Not for that reason. They're just excellent. But there you go.
How long have you been wearing Florsheim?
Since I moved back to Wisconsin.
And they're comfortable, aren't they?
they're great shoes.
Let's talk a little bit longer about, okay, so, and Evers wins back 2018, you worked on that campaign, then you became chair. Was that a tough campaign, winning the chairmanship or the chair?
Well, I wound up winning by a really significant margin, but it was, you know, I just moved back after being away for a while. So I had to kind of reintroduce myself to people. And I left my job to campaign full-time and crisscrossed the state, traveled all over the place, did a ton of listening. I made thousands of phone calls and asked members of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin what was working, what they wanted to see changed, you know, why they were involved. did a ton of organizing work. We had volunteers. We had a whole operation. It was really like a mini regular campaign. In that race, I used a newly built relational organizing tool that is now actually the standard tool of the Biden campaign. That was my first exposure to it, and we've been advocating for it and using it at the state party. So it was a great kind of education in Wisconsin politics to run. And then we wound up winning by a huge margin. I ran with a ticket. Felicia Martin's my first vice chair, and Lee Snodgrass was my second vice chair. Now she's in the state legislature. It's Trisha Zunker. So it's a team effort. And I just fell in love with the way that the party works to make democracy work at every level. And people who are really driven by values, who stuck with it, even in incredibly tough times when Republicans had total control and were really ravaging the whole state, defunding public schools, a million other things, but they refused to give up. And that tenacity has really inspired me and is part of what makes me so excited to go to work every day.
Tell me about going to work every day. You travel a lot, of course, around the state. What is your job as chair?
So I see a chair having five roles. The first is to set the overall vision, strategy, kind of values, culture of the state party, and to put at the center of our work the values that make us Democrats and make us care about what happens in our political system. The second thing is hiring and managing the executive director, and I've been just incredibly lucky to work with superb people who lead the kind of executive management of the team. Our ED now is Cassie Finelli, who's the campaign manager for Governor Evers in the most expensive governor's campaign in 2022. That person then manages the senior department leads and all that stuff. So first, overall vision. Second is managing the ED. The third thing is making sure that there's enough fundraising to support the strategy that the executive director manages the team to carry out. The fourth thing is communicating everywhere.
And how are you at communicating? Let me ask you that question.
I'm reading several books on the topic, and I hope to learn more over time. That's good.
Good.
And then the last thing. Fifth?
communicate the fifth.
The fifth piece is political problems that the chair can be helpful in solving. And it's just, politics is a people business, and there's the politics of politics are a never-ending stream. In some ways, I see my job as like helping with sort out, if people are having a disagreement about something, or they remembering some rift that happened in the past and can't come together now. My job is like, I try to contain and resolve political problems in a way that's based in our values as a party, so that those things don't interfere with the work that all of us have to do to elect Democrats up and down the ballot. That's the mission of the party, is electing Democrats. We see that as the key strategy we have to try to make the world a better place.
And you've been winning under you, I will say. 2020, again, a little over 20,000 votes. We got one coming up this November. This is going to be a big slog.
This is going to be intense. So we are, if you look at like the Wall Street Journal poll that came out in the last week, Wisconsin is literally tied. And that jives with a lot of other research that we have. It's going to be most likely another razor-thin margin. This election we're both the tipping point potentially in the presidential election and in the Senate majority and in a couple of House races and in state legislative races. We have a chance to try to flip the state assembly for the first time in a generation.
That's because there are these fair maps.
Exactly, because of the fair maps, because of the work people did to elect Supreme Court justices who reflect the state's values and reelected Governor Evers. It was the first time since 1962 that we've won a governor's race when there was a Democratic president in the White House. Wisconsin is a kind of model state for the midterm swinging against the president's party. It happens almost every time, but this time we won.
Yeah. How much did he win by?
He won. This was a true Wisconsin landslide. He won by 3.4 percentage points.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who did he run against?
There was a guy named Tim Michaels who was, there was a little moment when multiple Republicans were going down to Mar-a-Lago to meet with Trump. And it was pretty clear that Trump was going to pick the Republican. Tim Michaels got Trump's blessing and then announced his candidacy. He actually was running against in a primary against Scott Walker's lieutenant governor, Rebecca Clayfish. And Tim Michaels in the primary laid out that he supported the total abortion ban that was first passed in 1849 in the state of Wisconsin, and he opposed exceptions for rape or incest.
And Wisconsin was a state then.
Wisconsin became a state in 1848, and the lawmakers lost no time.
Well, evidently in Arizona, they didn't have to wait to become a state.
It's true. And in Wisconsin and in Arizona, we had these very old 19th century laws passed before the invention of modern medicine. And it's not clear what those laws are actually intended to refer to. So our Supreme Court race became, in effect, a referendum on whether to have a Supreme Court that would actually, you know, consider this stuff in depth, or just would automatically take the most anti-abortion position possible. So, okay. The case has not yet come to the
Supreme Court. That was the choice.
So Wisconsin now, a lower court has concluded that the 19th century law does not apply now, and people are able to access abortion care again after a freeze that lasted more than a year. But now in Wisconsin, people can get access to that care, and it'll come to the Supreme Court. I'd be stunned if the Supreme Court decided to do what Arizona has done.
Reverse that. When did that happen? When did it flip? When you could get abortions in the state?
It was December 5th, 2023. We had a Dane County judge ruled that the law didn't apply, but then there wasn't actually an injunction on enforcement of the law until later in September of 2023.
Yeah, let's talk about what you're doing now to get Biden over.
So the first big thing is organizing. We are organizing in every corner of Wisconsin. We are working hand in glove with the Biden campaign here, which is essentially one team, one dream with the Biden campaign and the down ballot races and the party. We have 44 offices around the state. We have done hundreds of thousands of door knocks, phone calls, relational outreach from people to their own social networks just since the beginning of March. And it's April 10th when we're having this conversation. We are full steam ahead. And what's exciting about that work is the earlier you start talking to people, the more impact it has on everything that happens for the rest of the year. You figure out, you know, who are people who might be open to being persuaded? Who are people who just need a reminder to vote? Who are people who are now dyed-in-the-wool Trumpists who we can leave it to the Republicans to turn them out, but not spend right. our scarce resources having conversations with those people? It makes everything else that we do for the rest of the year more efficient when we do that organizing work early. And we are wasting no time on it. Biden, meanwhile, has been to Wisconsin 7 times since the midterm elections. He was just here this past Monday. And both Biden, the vice president, the first lady, we're getting a ton of presence, very clear opportunities to communicate about the way that their policies make a difference in people's lives, and a real contrast on issues like abortion, where Kamala Harris kicked off her Fight for Reproductive Freedom tour in the suburbs outside Milwaukee to make absolutely clear that if you want to restore the guarantee, the protection for your freedom to make your own decision about your own body, you have to vote for Biden and Harris in 2024. And I think that that's going to be a central issue as we get closer to November.
Let me ask you, are you worried about third party candidates? Because Hillary lost probably because of third party candidates in your state, don't you think?
You know, getting fewer votes than the opponent is the source of the loss, and there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can find the path to losing in 2016. It's absolutely the case that there were two different third-party candidates who won more votes than the margin of victory in 2016.
By quite a bit, I would think.
By quite a bit, absolutely. And, you know, we have to, as Democrats, we have to make the case to voters that they should vote for Biden, and they should also vote against Trump by voting for Biden. That if you actually want to defeat Trump, you have to cast a ballot for Biden, because otherwise, you know, you're effectively staying home. And the 2024 election could come down to a margin where RFK is a major factor, which is why Republicans, Trump staffers and Trump-aligned donors, they're all swarming to help RFK in his campaign. This is all really just a plot to try to get Trump back in the White House. And we've learned a lot from the last few years, and we're gonna fight for every vote, take nobody for granted, and write nobody off.
You know, RFK Jr. just won the endorsement of the American Association for the Advancement of Measles, Mumps, and Rubella. That's the third time I've told that joke on this podcast, but you hadn't heard it, so that's good. I don't think. Have I told
that? You haven't told me the joke yet, and I love the joke. It says it all.
That's satire. Satire, you see.
What if we used the power of satire to advance a set of ideas?
I don't know.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
The early 2000s was a wild time for reality TV. There seemed to be an endless supply of shows that delivered entertainment for us, but trauma for children. I'm Misha Brown, the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Each week on The Big Flop, comedians join me to chronicle the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question, who thought this was a good idea? We recently looked behind the scenes of what was really going on at Abby Lee Miller's dance studio. Abby's biggest misstep wasn't screaming nonsensical catchphrases or throwing chairs on television, but instead, she was choreographing financial fraud in plain sight. Join me to break down all the wild details of Abby Lee Miller's story. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me, DJ Fu, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Once Upon a Beat.